This is WBUR's All Things Considered. I'm Lisa Mullins. In the world of cancer care, there is much to celebrate. In the last 2 years, the FDA has approved dozens of new treatments to fight the disease. The vast majority of those drugs are targeted therapies, the kind that require particularly complex medical care. At the core of that care is the oncology nurse. So the job of the nurse in cancer care is now even more demanding, and in the next few years, that pressure could be compounded by a shortage of oncologists, the doctors who specialize in treating patients with cancer. As we continue our series this week called This Moment in Cancer, we look at the growing demands on the oncology nurse. David Freudberg is the host of the public radio series Humankind, based in Belmont. He's produced a documentary series about the challenges in nursing in today's healthcare environment. It's called Resilient Nurse. David, you interviewed oncology nurses all across the country. There's professional stress, physical stress, and a particular kind of emotional stress. What did you learn about what they face now every day?
They're difficult conditions with so many baby boomers flooding into our healthcare system and the new cohort of patients coming in as a result of the Affordable Care Act. And many of them have what's called higher acuity, more difficult to treat symptoms. In addition, there are budget difficulties, and you have all the technology that nurses increasingly are responsible for monitoring of a patient. And this adds a kind of emotional stress because they want to make a personal connection to the extent that their job limitations permit. And when you're having to mostly focus on machinery and technical measurements and special procedures, that becomes an obstacle to direct care of the patient.
There was one nurse that you spoke with in particular who put a fine point on this. Can you tell us about Ashley Weber?
She's a nurse at Children's Hospital Colorado at the Center for Cancer and Blood Disorders. She cares for patients right at the bedside. And in cancer treatment, frequently there's a whole cocktail of drugs that have to be administered. And it can be quite overwhelming for the nurse who needs to obviously keep track of the particular medications.
We're working with severely immunocompromised people that if you don't prep, the insertion site with alcohol for as long as it needs to be, you could be introducing a bloodstream infection. Some of the medications we give, you'll read, the adverse side effects or reasons that we would stop a certain study that a patient's on and it's death. You're just waiting for that clearing of the throat to be an indicator that your patient's going to stop breathing. And then when we're at home and we see a phone call from work, we think, what did I do wrong? Who did I kill? What medication did I not give? What chemo didn't go in right? And we're looking at patients that each have easily 15 to 30 meds each.
And remember that these are pediatric patients at a children's hospital, so everything is on the line.
She mentioned there, by the way, getting a phone call from the hospital and wondering, oh my gosh, what did I do wrong now? There are a lot more lines of communication open now between not only hospitals and the nurses, but also the patients and the nurses. You talked to some who actually got texted by their patients.
I happened to interview a couple of wonderful nurse practitioners on the staff at the Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, the famous hospital in Los Angeles, at the breast center there. And they do provide their cell phone and text abilities to their patients because they really want to be available to them, some of whom are very compromised and extremely worried. So technological pressure has increased in the communications technology as well.
That idea of compassion was embodied very much in one of the Cedars-Sinai nurses. This is Sherry Goldman.
I can think of a specific incident where I told a patient some really devastating news, and I just reached out and held her, and we cried together. I don't have an issue with showing my feelings. There may be other clinicians that do, but how can you not when you're telling a young girl some tragic news and you see her completely fall apart? It's okay to fall apart with them and hold them, but then give them confidence afterward.
What did the nurses who you spoke with really in Boston and around the country tell you about the issue of compassion fatigue?
Well, compassion fatigue is a complex problem because some people would say compassion doesn't fatigue. It's the people who are trying to be compassionate who need to reframe the way in which they provide their compassion. It is potentially a serious problem because people do get tired. Some nurses don't even drink water during the day. They don't go to the bathroom during the day. I heard this over and over in different locations.
Because they don't have time.
Because the pressure is relentless, and for every patient they're dealing with, three more have rung the desk, and in addition, there's the families who are asking questions. It's just really tough, and this subjects you to medical errors, to a reduction in job performance. And the American Nurses Association in 2014 issued a statement warning against the risks of burnout in this kind of high-stress environment.
You spoke with a nurse in Boston who talked to you about encountering a patient, and the patient had taken a turn for the worse. He had a question for her. Let's listen to what she told you. This is Paulette Magnon at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston.
I was in his room, and he said, "What do you think happened to people after they die?" And I said, "I'm not sure." He said, "What is your belief?" And I said, "I believe that if you believe in God, that you are remembered and he will look after you." And he said, "What do you think happened to people that don't believe in God?" I said, "Well, whether you believe in him or not, he believes in you." When someone asks you something like that, it's just not a casual question. You can actually feel the pain coming from that person and the fear that that's going to be it for them, no return, nothing. It's not always that you give someone an ABC answer and they're fine.
So the nurses kind of have to be able to respond authentically to the needs as expressed by these patients at those delicate moments. And sometimes it can be profound.
You talk to nurses a lot about resilience. Especially oncology nurses, what were some of the examples of how they got through, how they kept coming back to a very difficult job day after day?
For one thing, the fact that when they did return the next morning, there were patients in need kind of revitalized them because that is their purpose for being there.
The very thing that's exhausting them also revitalizes them.
Well, isn't that often the case in caring professions?
Do you remember a particular example of what somebody said?
There are times in a difficult nursing clinic where they lose a patient. Sometimes the staff just moves on, doesn't even give themselves enough time to honor the life that was lost and to allow themselves some spiritual digestion time so that you can sort of process what's happening. So at this particular hospital, the University of Virginia Medical Center in Charlottesville, they have a specific procedure called the pause, where just for a few minutes they stand together and they remember the life, somebody they may have met only at the very, very tail end of that life, but who is a human being who had love, who was loved by others, and whose life mattered. And I'm impressed that at least in some healthcare centers now, that's being observed as a way to reconnect with what it's all about.
So nice to have you here, David Freudberg. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
David Freudberg is host of the public radio series Humankind and a producer of the documentary series Resilient Nurses. We'll make a link to his website and other stories in this series on cancer at WBUR.org. Tomorrow on Morning Edition, efforts to help patients determine which doctors and hospitals are providing the best cancer care.